cannot be free without also being brave. If you vote for the lesser of two evils, that is voting out of fear. That is the coward's way to vote. If you want the United States to be free, you have to be brave enough to vote your conscience.
Right. And, of course, my analogy, and I've probably told you this, you know, in a meeting that we had before, is that you've got two trains on parallel tracks going at about 100 miles an hour, with one going slightly faster than the other. Doesn't matter which one is going at which speed, but both the engineers are madmen. The brakes don't seem to work on either train, and both the trains are headed over a cliff.
Absolutely. You know, the only way that we can survive is to restore constitutional limitations on the government.
Right. I'd like to talk with you about a couple of domestic issues, if I may. And first, I'd like to talk to you about our immigration. And a lot of people are saying we've got so many people coming across the border and, you know, taking jobs or creating trouble. What is your response to those folks?
Well, the immigration question is multifaceted. There are a lot of different angles to approach it. First of all, the welfare system that we have, where we give free education, free health care, you know, free everything else, draws people to this country who are only coming here to be on the government dole. And libertarians will eliminate the welfare system, not just for people coming across the border, but for everyone. Welfare is theft. Secondly, the number of people coming across the border to work hard and spend money in an effort to raise their standard of living can actually improve the economy. The idea that there is a finite number of jobs and that it's one large pie that we have to share, and that by having people come across the border, you get a smaller slice of the pie, is not true. When a company grows and adds more employees, that's always a sign of growth and strength. And what we can do is we can actually grow the economy, make it better for everyone, and actually utilize these people coming across the border to improve our economy and our wealth. Thirdly, there are people who are coming across the border who are trafficking in drugs. They're the coyotes who are trafficking in human lives, and I'm told that even the Mexican military crosses the border occasionally, and they destroy American property and kill American citizens, and that is a crime. And we need to use our police and or military as appropriate to stop those crimes and to prosecute the people who are doing so.
Okay. Before I go on, I'd like to give the phone number out for those who wish to call in. It's 301-591-1646. Again, 301-591-1646 if you'd like to talk with Michael Bednarik, Libertarian Presidential Hopeful. One of the things that I think that we need to do, Michael, is talk about, you know, the government interference versus corporatism. A lot of people still feel that if the government doesn't get involved, then these large corporations are going to take over and, you know, there's going to be chaos. How do you address that issue?
That's a very short-sighted view of the world. You know, people are concerned about corporations.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, companies like Enron are a perfect example. There were a number of people at the top of Enron who were corrupt. They embezzled money, and they should be indicted and put in jail. But if people can at the top of a company can be corrupt, then people at the, you know, top of our government can also be corrupt. I mean, it's very much like having the fox guard the, you know, the chicken coop. And so what we need to do is realize that although the executives of Enron were corrupt, they're practically Boy Scouts compared to what Congress has done, specifically with the Social Security system. Social Security is $7 trillion underfunded. Nobody who is on Social Security feels secure. Some elderly people have to choose between buying food or paying for their pharmaceuticals in a given month because they can't afford to do both the same month. And so, you know, people who want the government to be in charge should recognize the government is often worse than the corporations. You are responsible for your putting food in your mouth. You are responsible for putting shelter over your head. And you are ultimately responsible for saving for your own retirement. When our parents and grandparents gave that responsibility to the government, you know, the government didn't do a very good job. And now people who are relying on Social Security are suffering the consequences of not being responsible for themselves. What we need to do is to acknowledge that a lot of people have worked hard, you know, invested money in Social Security, and they need to be taken care of. Libertarians in particular and Americans in general are the most generous culture on the face of the earth, and we will never allow our older disadvantaged to starve to death. However, what we would like to do is to follow the example of the country of Chile, which offered a privatized retirement plan, and within 2 years, 98% of the people in Chile transferred from the government system to the privatized system. We're not going to take Social Security away from anybody, but we're going to offer options that make Social Security woefully obsolete.
Okay. While we're at it, let's see. I had a guest stop by the studio. Oh, no, never mind. Mistake on my behalf there. A lot of people, you know, how would you address the issue of, I realize this may be sounding a little redundant, corporate welfare?
Corporate welfare is evil.
Okay.
Any kind of welfare is
true.
Evil. If you come and take $100 out of my wallet to use it for your benefit, that is theft. If you have the government come and take the $100 out of my wallet to give it to you for your benefit, that is government-sponsored theft. And libertarians are adamantly opposed to both. You have a right to your property. You do not have a right to someone else's property, no matter how great you perceive your need to be.
Okay. Trying to think. I'd like to talk about an issue that you had to face, if it's okay with you. And that was what happened in St. Louis, if that's okay.
Well, I can talk about it.
Okay.
Certainly, it was not okay with me.
I understand that, but
The fact of the matter is that I am a legitimate candidate from a legitimate party,
mm-hmm.
and I have a right to have my party's message heard.
Sure.
More importantly than that, the American public has a right to hear all sides of the message so that they can go to the polls in November to make an educated choice. The Democrats and Republicans would currently like you to believe that you can have any president you want as long as it's George Bush or John Kerry. Well, that's not a legitimate choice. I mean, we recently selected Miss America from over 50 contestants, and I think the office of President of the United States is far more important than that.
Mm-hmm.
And Americans should have more than just two choices, especially when the two choices are so similar.
Right. Wanted to back up a little bit. We were talking about the cost of things like health care and so forth being so expensive. And I think one of the problems that is not addressed and that we need to address is we need to look at symptoms, not root causes. How do you address these problems, such as, you know,
did you mean to say we need to look at root causes and not the symptoms?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm sorry if I...
That's okay. I just wanted to clarify, because the reason that we have problems is that the Democrats and Republicans continue to focus on the symptoms rather than the root cause. The libertarians want to go to the root cause. And we recognize that any time you want to increase the quality of the service and decrease the cost of that service, the only legitimate option is to open it up to the law of supply and demand. The reason that health care is so expensive is specifically because the government is involved. The Food and Drug Administration has a 10-year testing process for every pharmaceutical that costs approximately $1 billion. And American consumers are allowed to pick up that tab in higher pharmaceutical costs. The government is involved in regulating the health insurance industry. They decide what services can or cannot be paid for by the health insurance companies, which potentially eliminates one of your life-saving choices, which is just immoral. It also raises the cost of those services, and doctors are also part of the problem, because when they charge the health insurance company, they can charge far more money than they would charge the consumer. My mother went to the hospital for a blood test. The doctor charged her health insurance company $600 for a blood test my mother could have gotten at the local drugstore for $25. Now, if all of the insurance companies are paying that kind of upcharge, then you have to know that the health insurance premiums are going to go up. And that is the basic reason that, you know, we cannot afford health care. You literally cannot afford to be sick in the United States. The libertarian solution would be to get the government out of health care altogether. You are responsible for deciding, you know, what health care you need. And, you know, if you want to use the assistance of a doctor, that's perfectly up to you. But when doctors are allowed or required to compete against each other, such as the way they compete with LASIK surgery for your eyes or cosmetic surgery, neither of those procedures is controlled or paid for by insurance companies. They are considered elective surgery. And because they're not covered by health insurance, you know, doctors have to compete. The prices for LASIK surgery and cosmetic surgery have been dropping steadily for the last 5 or 6 years.
Okay. We've got an in-studio guest, Leroy, who stopped by the studio. And Leroy, would you care to talk to Michael Bednarik?
Hello there. This is Leroy McDuffie.
I am Leroy.
Pretty good. I'm currently a senior at McDaniel College in Westminster, Maryland. And in my political science classes, we constantly discuss the election process in this country. I was about to ask you, how do you feel about our current ways that this country conducts election? Do you feel as though that this country's democracy would be better served by proportional representation like they do in European parliaments, or do you like the single-member district balloting that we currently use today?
Well, first of all, I would like to reject the idea that the United States is a democracy. The United States is a constitutional republic, as in, I pledge allegiance to the flag and to the republic for which it stands. The difference between a republic and a democracy is that in a democracy, 51% majority can vote away the rights or property of the 49% minority. So there is no protection for minorities in a democracy. In contrast, in a constitutional republic, the individual rights of one person supersede any attempt at a unanimous vote. Rights cannot be voted away. Now, having said that, the Libertarian Party does support instant runoff voting or approval vote voting. Both systems would allow a voter to cast a ballot for more than one candidate. Right now, the biggest problem that libertarians face is the wasted vote argument. The wasted vote argument goes away as soon as voters can cast a ballot for more than one candidate. They would be able to vote for the Libertarian first, based on principle, and then either the Democrats or Republicans, you know, second and third, as they perceive them to be beneficial. And if we were to change our voting system, third parties of all stripes would suddenly see a dramatic increase in their support, indicating a much clearer depiction of what the population felt with regard to these particular third parties. And so our voting system, which only allows you to cast a ballot for one person, actually limits your choice and deprives people of expressing their true desires.
Okay. I understand we have someone called in. Is this correct? Oh, it's not. Okay. Okay. Leroy, did you have any other comments that you'd like to make?
Yeah, speaking of the third party being able to become a more of a vocal aspect in today's political culture. I was wondering, what are your ideas as far as advertising third parties as mainstreams? I know a lot of the mainstream media networks today make it very difficult for third parties to get any exposure in the debates going on between the Democrats and the Republican candidates, even in the congressional elections. So how do you feel as though will be a feasible way for third-party candidates to become more mainstream and get more PR in the present-day society?
Well, first of all, the Democrats and Republicans have established a system which sets up incredible obstacles for third parties. Third party candidates have to go through a huge signature process, spending, you know, thousands of dollars and thousands of hours of volunteer time just to get ballot access so that our candidates can be on the ballot. That robs us of resources that could have been used to promote our candidates. Once we are on the ballot, federal candidates such as myself are denied the opportunity to debate. If I had been allowed to debate George Bush and John Kerry, I would have easily won that debate, and I could have changed the course of American politics forever, which is precisely what the Democrats and Republicans want to avoid. They don't want to lose the stranglehold on American politics that they currently have. But third parties need to realize that this is a difficult situation. The Democrats and Republicans are not likely to make it easier for us, and we need to gather more money. We need to put our money where our mouths are. We need to finance our respective parties. We need to finance our candidates, and the Libertarian Party this year is doing exactly that. My campaign has raised approximately $900,000, and we have spent approximately $300,000 on television coverage. Recently, we started broadcasting commercials on Fox News Network to reach, you know, all Americans, to let people know that they are not required to vote for the lesser of two evils, and that if you do vote for the lesser of two evils and your candidate wins, you still get evil. So there is no silver bullet. There is no secret handshake that we can use in order to make third parties more prominent. The only way that we are going to have our message heard is to work hard, continue to insist in participation in the various debates, and to never, ever give up.
Okay. I'd like to bring up an issue with you, Michael, on the a case that went to the Supreme Court last year, and a very controversial one at that, and that was Lawrence versus Texas. And there are people out there, so-called constitutional purists, who believe that that issue was absolutely, it was an infringement on states' Tenth Amendment rights. What is your response to something like that?
Well, states technically do not have rights, in spite of the use of states' rights by many libertarians. The expression states' rights implies that state governments have superiority over the federal government, and the federal government cannot infringe on the powers of the state. However, the state power comes from the individual. We, the people, created the state governments. The state governments subsequently created the federal government. And nothing, absolutely nothing, will trump individual rights. And two individuals who have, you know, fallen in love and decided they are going to live together, regardless which gender they are, mm-hmm. have absolute every right to, you know, to live together and to express their love and to pursue happiness in whatever way they choose. And neither the federal government nor the state government has any authority to, you know, override or control those individual rights.
Okay. Let's see if we will. As far as domestic issues, you know, you mentioned deficit spending. What do you feel is the most important one facing America right now?
I don't understand the question. Which department are we wasting the most money on?
Well, no. I'm just saying, which domestic issue, issue concerned with the U.S. do you think that we are is the most important right now?
Well, deficit spending is a broad topic, but, you know, it doesn't matter what the government is spending the money on. You know, they're typically wasting it. The federal government is only authorized to do the things that state governments are incapable of doing, such as national defense, coining money, and operating the post office. The federal government should be doing very little else. The 10th Amendment says that the powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution are reserved to the states or to the people. And, you know, libertarians want to enforce the 10th Amendment to dramatically reduce the size of the federal government to its constitutional limitations and push those decision-making powers back to the state governments or, more importantly, back to the individual where it belongs.
Okay. I understand we have a call. Caller, would you go ahead? You're on Liberty Feed.
Yes, thank you. I'd like to ask Mr. Bagnon, as president, what would he do to the Social Security system as we have it? How would he change it for us?
Well, basically, I wouldn't change it. It's a failed system. Social Security is very much like the Titanic with the propellers up in the air. You don't have to be a Navy admiral to know this boat is going to sink. Good news, I suppose, is that I'm not planning to take Social Security away from anybody who's hanging on to the decks of the Titanic. What we are going to do is offer one or more privatized retirement systems that people would be able to voluntarily transfer to. And as they did in the country of Chile, 98% of the people transferred to the privatized system within 2 years in Chile. So I'm not going to take Social Security away from anybody who thinks that their survival depends on it, but we are going to offer at least one alternative that makes Social Security woefully obsolete.
Okay. Anything else, caller?
No, that's it. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. We talk about what happened in Chile. What exactly did occur there, and what were the outcomes?
Well, in Chile, they offered a privatized retirement system. You know, just like any other product or service, you know, you just set up a shingle, you offer it to people, and it provides competition with the government-provided service, and the government service was so poor that 98% of the people voluntarily chose to leave the government system and to put their money and their investment into a privatized system, so with a company that they could actually have a contract with, and the privatized system was preferred 98% to 2% because it would actually provide, you know, for goods and services when you're ready to retire.
Okay. I'd like to talk about something, you know, that, you know, some people will say, and Leroy, you can probably understand where I'm coming with this, that, you know, if it weren't for affirmative action, if it weren't for the civil rights of the acts that took place in the 60s, you know, certain people would probably consider or would be considered, still considered second-class citizens. I want your thoughts and what opinions. Do you agree with that? And if not, what are your points of view?
Well, slavery is a terrible, terrible tragedy. It's an embarrassment, or should be an embarrassment, to all Americans that slavery was enshrined in the Constitution at Article 1, Section 9, Clause 1. The Constitution actually forbid Congress from making slavery illegal until after 1808. And the problem with our Constitution is that it was schizophrenic. On one hand, it says all men are created equal. On the other hand, we were labeling blacks as three-fifths of a person, which is a contradiction in philosophy. The civil rights movement prior to the Civil War and up until the 1960s was focused on equal opportunity, giving people an opportunity to be equal, recognizing that is significantly different than equal results or equal property. Unfortunately, since the 1960s, the civil rights movement has been hijacked by people who have modified the philosophy and the current civil rights activists, as they are now called, are claiming that unless you have equal results based on usually arbitrary principles, that, you know, things are not the way they should be. For example, whenever you have a quota system based on population, that, you know, perhaps 30% of the population is black, therefore it's assumed that 30% of members of a particular office are required to be black. And what that does is it causes the people, the company, to hire based on race rather than based on talent or merit. And while it may give certain minorities a job, those jobs are always suspect because anyone, no matter how hard they have worked, is now thought to have achieved that particular position only because of affirmative action. The problem with affirmative action is that when you try to counterbalance the scales, there is no doubt that slavery was evil, but if you try to manually and physically adjust the scales, the question is, how much do you have to do? How hard do you have to push? How do you know when you are finished with the balancing process? When do you let go of the scales and let the ordinary balance of society take over? And unfortunately, the current civil rights activists are manhandling the scales and demanding that people who, without talent, be put into a position, regardless of what intellect they have, but based purely on their skin color. That is reverse racism, and everyone should be opposed to that. The difference between equal opportunity and equal property is that under the current equal property premise, if I have $10 and you have $100, then you're required to give me 45 of your dollars because we have to be equal. Mm-hmm. Whereas under the legitimate interpretation of the Declaration of Independence, everyone has an equal opportunity to property. You have a right to your property. I have a right to my property. If you have more property than I do, you have a right to that property because you were more intelligent or worked harder for it.
Okay. And I understand we have a caller.
Yes, we have Zach from Arlington, Maryland.
Zach, go ahead.
Yes, Mr. Badnarik. I would like to ask, I'd like to hear your position on the fair tax system or the national consumption tax of 23%.
Well, I would like, if I was elected president, I would get rid of the IRS completely, and I would not replace it with the fair tax. The, you know, if you are currently suffering from arsenic and I substitute that with strychnine, I'm not making your life any better. We don't need the IRS. The Constitution was ratified in 1789. The IRS didn't come into existence until 1913. Indicating that we had over 100 years with no IRS, no income tax, and the American government had more than enough money to operate. That was because the federal government was limited by Article 1, Section 8 of the Constitution, which it is no longer, which is no longer true. So I have conditionally endorsed the fair tax movement by virtue of the fact that the IRS is so entrenched that any changes would be an advantage to eventually eliminating all of the taxes together. And the my conditional endorsement of the fair tax was that, you know, eventually the fair tax would be eliminated as well.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. And you mentioned taxes. And I will confess I'm not as well versed on the Constitution as I should be. But isn't it true that the income tax did not apply to the common citizens?
Well, that is one of the things that has been suggested. The Article 1, Section 2, Clause 3 says that representatives and direct taxes shall be apportioned. California has 10% of the members of the House of Representatives because it has 10% of the population. that anytime Congress poses a tax, 10% of the tax should be sent from Washington to Sacramento. The 16th Amendment presumes to change that by saying that the Congress shall have the power to lay and collect taxes on incomes from whatever source derived without the benefit of apportionment. However, there have been Supreme Court cases that have struck down that interpretation, indicating that the 16th Amendment confers no new power of taxation on Congress. However, the question really is not how are we going to get the money. The legitimate question is which of the federal agencies are constitutional, which of them should we get rid of, and, you know, how dramatically can we reduce the size of the federal government? If we reduce the size of the federal government down to its constitutionally limited state, then we will require very, very few taxes to begin with.
Right. Leroy, I believe you have a few words to say?
Yes, I do. I was wondering, you don't feel that a progressive tax would be in the best interest for lowering the tax burden on lower-class people?
Have you ever read the Communist Manifesto?
Yes, I have.
What is the first plank of the Communist Manifesto?
You have to brush me up on that. It's been a little while.
The first plank of the Communist Manifesto is to abolish private property. That is why communism is evil. The first plank tells you what they are going to do. The second through tenth plank of the Communist Manifesto tells you how they're going to do it. And plank number five, I believe, no, five is central bank, the third plank of the Communist Manifesto is a progressive income tax. A progressive income tax, which we in the United States know as the IRS. So whether the IRS has been approved by Congress or not, it is in principle a socialist or communist idea.
Right. Okay.
All right, then. We've just got a few minutes left, and if you had any lessons to learn from the campaign, Michael, what would they have been, and maybe what would you might have done differently?
There's very little that I would have done differently. What we are doing is teaching people about the Constitution and teaching them about the libertarian movement. And even after the election, I plan to continue that effort by teaching my 8-hour Constitution class and promoting my book on the Constitution. The title of that book is Good to Be King, and it is currently available on Amazon.com. And in the short week that it's been available, my book has already climbed onto the Amazon.com bestseller list, achieving number 22, I believe. And so anyone who wants more information about the Constitution and the foundation of our form of government should go to Amazon.com and look for Good to Be King.
Okay. We'll definitely have to take a look at that. And your course that you offer, do you travel around, or how does that work?
I travel around, and I will gladly teach my class to any group that would like me to attend. The website for my class and for my book is separate from the campaign. That website would be constitutionpreservation.org.
Okay, constitutionpreservation.org. Michael, I want to thank you very much for being on my show. Sorry about the glitches earlier. And I can only wish you the best. I am trying to do my darndest to get the message out to as many people as possible. All I can say is best of luck.
Thank you so much. I appreciate your time and your effort in helping me to light the fires of liberty one heart at a time.
All right. Bye now.
Bye-bye.